Hello and welcome to Bookworms. This is the show where we read a book and then talk about that book. I'm your host, Alex.
And I'm Joe.
How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing good, Alex. What's up?
Oh, well, nothing much. I understand we both read the same story, so I want to talk about that.
Yes, we did read the same story, and it was my pick this month.
What book was it?
It was Lamb. The Gospel According to Biff, Christ's Childhood Pal, by Christopher Moore.
What a book it was.
Yeah, it is a book. A very funny book.
Had a cover and, like, pages. And, like, on the pages were these ink stains that were some sort of glyphic that helps us understand language and tells a story.
Yeah, and as I said, this is a very funny book. This is probably one of my all-time favorite comedy books. It does offend a lot of people because of the subject matter.
It's a very religious story, and most would argue that it's a very sacrilegious story because it covers parts of Christ's life in a fictional, really raunchy narrative.
Yeah, they cover a lot of the missing years of Jesus, because in the Bible they have his birth and essentially his death. But they have a lot of years in the middle that are never discussed.
Yeah, so the Bible, you know, you got the nativity, and then it jumps ahead to when Jesus is a 30-year-old man with disciples following him around, and it ends with the passion of the Christ and his crucifixion. So Lamb covers that 30-year time span as narrated by Joshua's, or Jesus's, childhood pal, Levi, known as Biff.
I'll read the back here, even though that was pretty much what the back says.
Finished it.
The birth of Jesus has been well chronicled, as have his glorious teachings, acts, and divine sacrifice after his 30th birthday. But no one knows about the early life of the Son of God, the missing years, except Biff, the Messiah's best bud, who has been resurrected to tell the story of this divinely hilarious yet heartfelt work, reminiscent of Vonnegut and Douglas Adams. Verily, the story of Biff has to tell is a miraculous one, filled with remarkable journeys, magic, healings, kung fu, corpse reanimation, demons, and hut babes. Even the considerable wiles and devotions of the Savior's pal may not be enough to divert Joshua from his tragic destiny. But there's no one who loves Josh more, except maybe Maggie, Mary of Magdala, and Biff isn't about to let his extraordinary pal suffer and ascend without a fight.
That was amazing. Yeah, listeners, anytime Joe gives me shit about reading the backs of books or anything out loud, just remember this moment.
Was it that bad?
You were gorgeous.
I'm going to take that as I was that bad.
We all have our strengths. You
reading out loud is not one of them.
Yeah. You just have, your strength is having that face for radio.
And a voice for silent movies.
Yeah. The book, the back of the book summarizes it pretty well. This is a, by and large, a coming-of-age story featuring Christ and his buddy Biff, and shenanigans ensue.
Yeah. So we start off with Biff being brought back to life, and we meet an angel that has told Biff that he has to write a gospel.
Yeah, so the angels decide they want to...
What's that word? Words are hard.
Words are hard. Yeah, the angels decide they want to write about that portion of Christ's life, and they resurrect his buddy to write down everything he knows about that time, because Biff spent his entire life from the age of 6 to both of their deaths with Jesus, so he's like the expert on Jesus's time.
Yeah, and it's kind of comical early on, because neither of them know anything about modern technology or life. They have to go get the, whoever, the Daenerys is that they got from Judas and buried, so they can, I think, it's fly to L.A. and rent a hotel for months at a time.
Yeah, basically, an angel imprisons Biff in the room until he gets this writing done, and Biff, you know, he really doesn't like the angels to begin with, and so there's just this funny, like, antagonistic relationship between him and Raziel the angel, while Biff's being forced to write and Raziel's sitting there watching soap operas and WWE.
Not realizing all this is fake.
And so, yeah, there's a present narrative which tells that. Biff also finds a Bible in the hotel room, so he gets to read the New Testament for the first time. He makes an escape attempt or two, but in the end he sits there and he writes the whole Gospel of Biff.
Yeah. So then we get into meeting Jesus, or the time Biff meets Jesus for the first time, or as he calls him, Josh.
Joshua, the actual name he was born with and given, because Jesus is a Greek term used to assign that meaning. Gosh, what does it mean? I don't even remember. Yeah, excuse me.
Ooh.
Yeah. So he's known as Jesus is referred to as Joshua throughout the whole book, because that's the name he was given.
And the opening scene of Joshua is him sticking dead lizards into his mouth and resurrecting him to entertain a little brother.
Yeah, that's what you do as a six-year-old, is you put lizards in your mouth and bring them back to life.
Yeah, and then you smash them on the head, so you kill them and bring them back to life again.
And Biff, even at that age, realized, hey, this guy is something unique, so I'm going to hang out with him.
Yeah, first he told his mom, hey, this kid's, you know, using demon power. But then he's like, yeah, I might want to hang out with him. He looks kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's the opening of the book.
Yeah, and we get to see Joshua like start performing minor miracles. So obviously resurrecting a lizard, starts upgrading, and eventually starts trying to resurrect people. We get those, you know, formative years of their upbringing, and they befriend Maggie, who becomes a love interest for both of them.
Before we meet Maggie, Biff has another love interest, the Virgin Mary.
Oh, yeah.
She's not quite a virgin by that point, because she has other children.
As the book states, she might not be a virgin anymore, but she was at one point.
Yeah, and Biff has a major crush on her and basically has to get beat up by Joshua on a fairly regular basis for making pervy comments. As Biff will say a few times, Joshua is not a complete pathist.
Not so easy, is it?
Words are hard, man. Joshua is not a complete pacifist. Pacifier. So yeah. Hot moms.
Yeah. And the first 100 or so pages is like from ages 6 to 15. So we get a huge span of time as Jesus learns about his powers and Biff kind of grows into the kind of a-hole that he becomes throughout the story. He cares deeply about Joshua and Maggie specifically, but he also is like, he's very selfish and he's got, you know, hatred for the Romans, and he's a kind of an angry teenager, even through the lens of humor that this book has.
Yeah, Biff is kind of that character that is able to do what Joshua is not allowed to do in a lot of aspects. He's pretty much the yin to Joshua's yang.
And that kind of philosophy does weigh heavily in this book, so that's a good point. Yeah, so like, and like Joshua will use Biff's kind of, we call it amoral, or I keep forgetting all my words, like Biff's lack of morality as a tool to learn about the world, because Joshua's visited by an angel and he learns he's the Messiah and that he can't do certain things. So he uses Biff to learn about the ways of the world so that he can more effectively teach, and often to humorous levels as we get into like part two when they set off on a quest.
Yeah, but we do get some other characters introduced into the narrative before that that do come back, like Justice, the Legionnaire. He ends up being important. We also have the fathers who are trying to get their sons to take up their jobs or labors that they do. So Biff's father is a stonemason, where Joseph, Joshua's father, is a carpenter. And Biff basically talks Joshua into becoming a stonemason. This echo is really bad.
Yeah, there's like a delay.
Yeah, so becoming a stonemason, it brings the boys to a different city than where they're growing up, and they start mingling with legionnaires, and trouble basically ensues because of it.
Trouble just follows them everywhere they go. It's they sometimes it's self-induced, sometimes it just finds them. But yeah, when they start getting into tussles with Romans, and the Romans are looking for any reason to persecute the Jewish population, there's some early conflicts that we see that sets up some of the later conflicts that we see when Jesus is leading his disciples towards the end of the book.
One of those conflicts is with the Jewish heads of state, the religious leaders, and one of their sons, who ends up getting betrothed to Mary, Maggie, and it kind of gets them going on their trip because they don't want to be around for the wedding.
They're both in love with Maggie, and like neither of them gets to get her. And there's this whole issue where a Roman soldier dies and they're going to kill a person. And,
they have Joseph. Was it Joseph locked up?
Yeah, I think it was Joseph. Yeah, Joseph is locked up. And in order to get him out, they pledge Maggie to, gosh, what's his name?
Some asshole.
Yeah, some asshole, the son of a local Pharisee. And she's disgusted by this person because he's been like their childhood bully the whole time. I think it shows Joshua and Biff's youth and selfishness, where they don't want to go to the wedding for their friend, even though she would probably really appreciate having someone there to support her at the time. And like, they decide they want to go on this quest and, you know, get away from it all. That's like their calling, is to just escape this uncomfortable situation where they're watching someone they care about fall in with something that she doesn't want. And they're like, hey, I got great news. They go to her and they're like, great news. We're leaving. We won't be there. And she flips out at them.
Yeah. And Biff ends up losing his virginity.
It's like the night before they leave. Yeah, Biff.
Maggie wants Joshua, but Joshua knows he's not allowed and knows what she's going to do. So he sends Biff, and yeah, fun ensues.
They hook up right before they leave. It's like that last moment they have together. And
the two boys slink off like the cowards they are.
Exactly. And they go on a mission to track down the three wise men that had visited Joshua in his crib.
Yeah, and the whole reason why Joshua feels like he needs to find these wise men is he knows he's supposed to become the Messiah, but doesn't know how. And Biff decides to go with him because he realizes Joshua is naive and will get robbed and killed within the first 5 miles.
Joshua is honest to a fault throughout this entire book. And so Biff sometimes has to use his more cunning and deviousness to protect them. Before they find the first wise man, though.
Yeah, this is where we get one of our favorite jokes.
This was one of the funny scenes. So I was listening to this on audiobook, and the narrator seemed to take great joy in reading the scene where Josh is curious about the ways of lovemaking, and he wants to learn all about it. And what their bright idea is to get Biff to spend the bulk of their money on prostitutes, and while he's with these prostitutes, describe the sensations that he is feeling.
Yes.
And it's done in great detail. many, many pages are spent on describing the details Biff is experiencing in the situation.
Yeah, it was making me crack up pretty good even reading it a second time. And the whole reason why they get the prostitute is because Biff is getting annoyed about answering it about Maggie. So first person they run into on the big city happens to be a prostitute, as young boys are apt to run by. And they quickly make a deal, and the prostitute is more than happy to oblige. Definitely
for the
book. It was bad.
So they do that, and then they carry on. Their journey takes them throughout, like, the Middle East and Asia as they search for these three wise men. They find the first wise man, Balthazar.
And the bulk of the book is probably based around him.
Yeah, this is like parts 2, 3, and 4 are all about finding the three wise men, and especially Balthazar. They spend the most amount of time within the book on. But yeah, they find him living in a mountainside castle with his 8 concubines, and they go there, and he starts teaching them several of the Asian philosophies, especially the teachings of Buddha, the Bhagavad Gita, things like that. And he's got a dark secret that's taunted throughout the entire time they spend with him. He's 260 years old, and one of the questions they have is, how does he live that long?
Yeah, essentially, Balthazar is trying to find the secret to live forever. We find out a little bit later that his temporary hold is to have a demon. This demon is a favorite of Christopher Moore. He uses him in other books.
Does he?
Yes, he does.
Oh, really? Yeah, I've never read any other Christopher Moore books, so that's cool.
I've read pretty much all of them, except for maybe one or two of the latest. But yeah, this demon is named Ketch. He's from Practical Demon Keeping. We don't meet Ketch right away. First, we start off with the concubines, where what do they do to Biff?
Oh, so Balthazar tells them that they're not allowed to go behind a certain door. Classic Pandora's box situation. So
of course, Biff asks a question, what's behind that door?
So they slip him a poison that paralyzes him for an entire week before they give him the antidote to teach him a lesson.
They paint him blue.
Yeah.
They smurf him.
Yeah, they smurf him right up. And then, eventually they decide he's learned his lesson. They slip him the antidote, and he's able to recover.
Joshua and Balthazar are learning real philosophy. Biff and the concubines learn a different kind of philosophy.
Biff learns a lot about the ways of love.
He ends up using the concubines himself and learning kung fu, explosions, all sorts of alchemy. So all the basic stuff you need to do crazy things, be the party boy.
And they end up spending quite a bit of time there, like a couple of years.
Every location they spend multiple years.
Yeah, so this is like from age like 15 to 20 they spend with Balthazar, getting to know him and his friends. And there's a little bit of a, what's called like a deus ex machina, where they give Biff the poison that they'd slipped him previously, which comes in handy much later in the story.
Yeah, so eventually Biff convinces the concubines to open the door with him. Well, because they're worried that Balthazar is falling in love with Joshua, and that's a big no-no, which is why there's 8 concubines.
So each one's not allowed to spend more than one day at a time in Balthazar's bed. And we find out it's because they're kind of there to be sacrifices, because the demon needs to eat.
Yeah, and eat he does. He kills 7 of the concubines when he gets let out.
The only one that survives is like the head one, Joy, they call her. She has a longer name. They all have longer names. I don't know. Their names are all funny.
One of them had a short name. I forget which one. Anyways.
It's like Sue or something like that.
So Joy and Biff survive. Balthazar, does he end up dying?
So after the demon kills 7 of the women. One survives. Joshua, there's like this whole chase scene where Joy and Biff are like running along the cliffside. The demon's hot on their tail. Joy like stops at one moment and like pisses all over the demon's face while he's climbing up after him. And then eventually Jesus catch up to them and he banishes the demon with the power of his words. And in the banishment of the demon, that causes Balthazar age to catch up with him, and he's dead within a week.
And that's that for Balthazar.
Yep. And
Joy ends up going to the city to live her life. They're pretty much really wealthy because Balthazar just had untold treasures. I mean, if I guess you're going to be alive for hundreds of years, you can build up quite the wealth.
Yeah, and we find that as Jesus interacts with his mentors, he eventually achieves much more than they ever do. Like Balthazar's fear of death is surpassed by Jesus because Jesus, leads him to be comfortable with passing, and Jesus almost like there's almost a flip where Jesus becomes his master, and he does he restores the natural order of things where people live and people die, and the fear of death is no reason why things shouldn't happen.
Balthazar did give them the directions to the next wise men, though.
He sends them to Gaspar, which they find him pretty quick. He is a Buddhist monk.
Yeah, but before they meet the Buddhist monk, they're heading east. They run into the Great Wall of China. And I got a quote here if I can find it. Just give me a minute. So they're talking about the mistake of building the Great Wall. What else does the Tao value above all else? Compassion? Those other two jewel things? No. Inaction, contemplation, steadiness, conservatism. A wall is the defense of a country that values inaction, but a wall imprisons the people of a country as much as it protects them. That's why Balthazar had us go this way. He wanted me to see the error of the Tao. One can't be free without action.
Very profound.
That's why he's a wise man.
Yeah, I didn't really pull a lot of quotes out of the book, but I did that one did sit with me when I was listening to it on the car.
Of course, Biff is like, how big could this wall really be? And they waste a few weeks trying to go around it. If just to find out that it's a really big damn wall
Yeah. And then they go up into the mountains.
where they become Buddhists.
Yeah. And they spend the next 6 years being Buddhist monks.
Hanging out with a Yeti.
Eating cold rice, shaving yaks, and learning the art of wanting.
And Kung Fu.
Like Kung Fu.
Lots of Kung Fu in this book.
Yeah, what book's complete without Kung Fu? But yeah, they live lives of poverty, they live lives of chastity for 6 years, except for 1.2 years in when Biff meets an old lady who's all about him, and he has one short thing where he just does it 5 times with her. No big deal.
He was very desperate. Though his meditation became a goal of total control over his member.
Yeah, that was a funny thing. Just like the rule was like no ejaculation unless it happens in dreams. So he became the just like patron saint of nocturnal emissions.
Meanwhile, Joshua is learning how to become invisible.
Which he achieves.
Yeah, which means he found a full self with himself or whatever.
He'd achieve like self-awareness or manage to achieve that like nothingness that the monks were hoping to achieve, where to the point where he became nothing but a voice. And Gaspar begins to open up and share more things with him, and they take
Well, at
him.
that point, Gaspar realizes he's a fraud. Well, he always kind of knew he was a fraud, but then meeting Joshua, who's actually able to take the teachings to the next level, he finally admits that, yeah, I'm just a fraud, and Biff, you're an idiot, but Joshua, you're something real.
Yeah, he's spent his life trying to achieve complete, oneness with the universe, and he realized he's never been able to do that. And a lot of his self-realization came with meeting a yeti up in the mountains. And then it's like this mythical beast, it's the only of its kind. And there's this whole philosophical thing where, like, why would God create something that's one of its kind and is doomed to perish alone?
And Gaspar had known of the Yeti and kind of idolized it, but had never really got to know it. Where Joshua actually befriended it, learned its language, and they became good friends until it finally died in a fairly pointless action. and Joshua was pretty crushed by it.
The Yeti was crushed by that ice.
It was. Yeah. It was kind of funny because Biff was the one that discovered the Yeti before Joshua. And basically Joshua was in a trance and Biff was doing all sorts of Biff stuff to try to get Joshua out. It was good fun.
Yeah, but yeah, the death of the Yeti helps Jesus realize that he's learned all he can from Gaspar, and he has once again become the master in this situation. And so he decides to leave, and they part on good terms.
Yeah, and they're going to go find Gaspar's brother,
Melchior.
And so we get into part 4, Spirit. So each part has its own little quote. So I'll read this quote because it kind of moved me a little bit. He who sees in me all things, and all things in me, is never far from me, and I am never far from him. From the Bhagavad something Gita.
The Bhagavad Gita?
Bhagavad Gita.
Don't ask me how I know that. Well, I didn't learn it in college, just know. It's whatever.
Aren't you special?
I'm so special.
Ed.
I specialize in education, you're correct.
You specialize in something, that's for sure. Let's leave it there.
Yeah, so before they find Melchior, they stop in a city, and they learn a little bit about human sacrifice.
Yeah, they learn about the Indian culture and one of their more famous goddesses.
The goddess Kali.
Be correct.
Yeah.
Thank you. I did not recall that name at the top of my head.
Yeah, they come across a bunch of worshippers of the goddess Kali, and they befriend someone. He and his family live in a filthy pit.
They run into the Untouchables, who live in pits that they do tanning and all the gross stuff and that no person would normally want to do.
They're untouchable not because they're so high, but because they are so low, nobody would ever want to touch them.
But Biff and Joshua find out that their families get sacrificed to Kali every year, and they just kidnap daughters, wives, sons, whoever they can grab. And these people just accept it because they think that in their next life, they'll hopefully get a better life. They won't be so low.
Yeah, so Biff and Joshua, they disrupt one of these sacrificial rituals, save a bunch of the children that were going to be given up to the goddess and return them back home. You know, it's a big whole thing where they're like dancing in raining fountains of blood and trying to distract people while they sneak the children out. There's some funny stuff, but it also leads to a decision by Joshua that with the word that he's spreading to make sure there's never going to be human sacrifice.
Yeah, Joshua sees that this is just wrong and wants to find a way to sacrifice so that no one ever else needs to be sacrificed. It's kind of that transition in religions, ancient religions, to more modern ones like Christianity.
And it pushes him closer to that destiny where he's going to be the one who sacrifices himself for everyone else.
And you can kind of start to see Joshua come into this conclusion here where he'd been building up to it and really creating his philosophy towards all human beings, saying that religion shouldn't have the in people and out people, that it should be able to take anybody, not just the select group, like either the Jews or a higher order of a caste system.
Yeah, and that winds up being one of his hardest lessons when he's with his disciples, is saying, like, this is a religion for everybody, because some people following him think otherwise, that it's going to be more of an exclusionary thing. And you know, he has to get that message across to even his disciples.
Yeah, so they disrupt this sacrifice, save all these children, and basically get told to get the hell out of here because these people kind of wanted it to die.
Yeah. So they carry on, and they climb a mountain, and on the cliff ledge, they meet
seaside
Melchior.
Cliff ledge, and yeah, they find the third wise man.
And Melchior is a yogi.
Yeah.
So they learn a lot of the spiritual elements of yoga and like the mindset behind it.
Joshua does.
Yeah.
Basically, Biff is told, get lost.
Yeah. Biff goes into town and meets a prostitute, reads the Kama Sutra, and does a lot of practicing.
And he also finds that this is where Jesus learns how to create more food out of little food. And Biff kind of screws up the whole economy of the town nearby by having Joshua create bags and bags of rice so that he can then pay this prostitute to learn the next page of the Kama Sutra.
Yep. For 20 rupees a page, he learns all he ever needs to know for the rest of his life.
Yep. Inflation, man.
But they end up not spending a ton of time. I mean, it might be
It's
very
several
short of,
years,
yeah, but
but
they really gloss over it
the
because,
book
yeah.
doesn't cover a lot here. We're starting to get fairly deep into the book.
It's like almost like diminishing returns. Like they spend like over 100 pages with Balthazar, like half that with Gaspar, and then with Melchior, it's like less than one chapter.
Yeah, they spent more time with battling Kali than with the last guy here. But it does get Joshua the final lesson he needs, like how to fit into a jar.
Exactly. So yeah, they've now been gone from home for 16, 17 years, and they decide it's time to return. It's the hero's journey. They're coming back to start spreading their word of everything they've learned.
The big lesson that Joshua wants to teach is that basically nothing's important, only saving every soul in the world that there is.
Easy enough.
Yeah, pretty easy.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, we head back west.
They get home, they find out right
Well,
away
first
that.
they meet Joy.
Oh yeah, they reunite with Joy. That's right.
Yeah, and she basically became the dragon lady of the city. And Biff has some fun with her, gives her an elephant, and then they go back home where Joseph has just died and family drama ensues because there's a lot of bitterness in Joshua's family.
Like they knew that Joshua has the power to resurrect people, and he wasn't there when his father died, so they weren't able to resurrect him. So he shows up, and there's some bitterness there. Like his younger brother is angry that he's lost his father, and like his father's like last concern was that he wanted to see Joshua, and Joshua wasn't there. Rather than it was kind of a prodigal son situation, where like the good son stays, but the parents still are more concerned with the child who left.
Yeah, so they do that. What else do they do? They basically
Reunite with
start,
Maggie.
yeah, they reunite with Maggie, see that she's pretty miserable, but making the best of it. They meet John again.
John the Baptist is probably one of my favorite characters in this book because he's the way he's portrayed by Christopher Moore is just being absolutely batshit insane. Just like trying to like use cleansing people as like an excuse to drown them, and like everything's impure and it needs to, like he's like pulling people into the water and like
Everyone's
holding
a
them under
slut.
for too long.
Everyone's a slut.
They're all sluts. It's like even when he dies, they still make like jokes about how everyone's a slut. It's like he died because some kid's slut daughter wanted his head on served on a platter. Isn't that the biggest irony?
John, man.
Yeah, he was great. That was so much fun. But yeah, like they find Maggie again. She's been married for a long time now. Basically a marriage for in appearances only.
Set completely sexless. She basically played off of her husband's fears of impure wives, blood, and periods, because apparently that's a big thing in
Yeah,
Jewish culture.
they'd lost a child earlier in their marriage, and she told him like she's like perpetually bleeding and that he's never came near her again.
Yeah, so Biff and Joshua go out, start gathering the disciples. Maggie's trying to find a way to join them because she's even more enamored with Joshua.
That's kind of one of my biggest criticism in this book. If you couldn't tell, there's a lot of characters. Like we're trying to explain this book, we're like 40 minutes into it, and it's like there's hundreds of characters in this story, it feels
Well, not
like. And
hundreds.
but it feels like that. And like they come and they go, and like we meet Romans, we meet people that live in pits, we live in castles. And by the time they get to the rounding up of the apostles, they all Biff, Josh, and Maggie all set out and they meet these people. Like we don't really get to know the apostles very much.
I think that was on purpose by Christopher Moore. I think this part of the story, he's kind of rushing through it. He a lot of the Bible stuff, he's not
we are
including.
At the part where they like the Bible like is telling this story, so like we understand like, oh, you know, this one's a fisherman, this one's Judas,
and we also kind of realize how as a narrator Biff is unreliable because everyone is just so stupid.
Yeah, he portrays the disciples as really dumb, like especially like Simon the Zealot and Thomas, like listening to the audiobook, like the narrator would talk about, don't use their voices like this whenever they talked. It was funny. But yeah, I think Biff's like vanity is coming through when he's like telling this part, because other than him and Maggie, everyone else is really dumb and they didn't understand Jesus's teachings and
the parables.
Yeah, it is parables.
So a mustard seed? What is it?
Yeah, Jesus spending like 2 hours using different metaphors to try and explain his philosophy and they're just not getting it. But like going back to what we were talking about earlier, like one of the big things was like Judas and Simon especially thought like this teaching was going to help them like lead a revolution against the Romans and free the Jewish people, where, you know, that's not really what Jesus is trying to say. He's trying to say like this is for everyone, including the Romans, regardless of what they've done to their people. Like the Romans still have the right to worship this new religion and be a part of it. And just like that inclusion of everyone, regardless of backgrounds and beliefs, is, I think, even nowadays, like still a teaching that's hard to get across to people.
And there's a lot of good conversations between Biff and like the zealots there. Was it Simon and Judas? And Biff is really unpopular with the apostles. They're jealous of his friendship with Joshua, and they don't feel like he fits in with their group because of his prones to not so much violence, because especially like the zealots, they're willing to do violence, but his ability to kind of control that violence.
And that's like one of the reasons why Biff is left out of the Bible by and large, is because the other apostles don't really like him and they don't like what he does in the final portion of the book, which is the Passion.
Yeah, this is where Justice shows back up. He's the one that is supposed to be helping Biff and Maggie. Basically, Joshua's like, I'm going to sacrifice myself. I'm going to die for everyone. And that's that. And he's doing everything he can to get himself arrested and killed. And all the apostles and Biff are trying to stop him. But eventually they realize, no, he's been captured and they're putting him on the cross. And Biff essentially makes a deal with Justice saying, hey, I got a way to make him look dead. We'll get him out of here. Just let me do my thing. And he gives Joshua the poison to paralyze him.
And like the Passion of the Christ is probably like the most retold story from the whole Bible. So like it's kind of neat having this like alternate version where his best friend is actively trying to save his life. And like the biggest change has got to be the fact that, you know, Judas betrays him. And in the Bible, Judas dies by suicide, hangs himself from a tree. However, in Lamb, after Biff fails to save Joshua, he kills Judas and then jumps off a cliff.
And that's basically where Biff's story ends, because he doesn't stick around for the resurrection.
And we get to just a brief epilogue where all the shenanigans from the hotel room are wrapping up. Biff hands his manuscript off to Raziel, and then he gets a nice surprise.
Yeah, he finds out on the other side of the hallway, Maggie was writing her own gospel.
Maggie got resurrected too, and the angels tell them, like, you guys are destined to spend the rest of your lives living in this time period. So Biff and Maggie get to live together and grow old together, kind of like Biff always wanted and Maggie always saw as a decent alternative.
Yeah, Maggie's kind of funny because she is devoted to Joshua, but as she will point out, if it wasn't for Joshua, Biff was her guy, and they really did care about each other. It was just that it was always Biff competing with Joshua, and I mean, who can compete with Jesus?
And I think they both chose Joshua.
Yes, they did.
Because, like, Biff could have stayed with Maggie. Like, they
Yeah, basically, Maggie
or they
and
could have run
Biff
off together.
could have run away together. That was kind of a that unspoken option.
But no, they both chose Jesus in the end. And but now that, you know, Jesus is still a bit, huge part of their lives, they get to, you know, be together, and it's kind of like they're all together as one.
Yeah.
And
And that's.
it ends on a kind of a lame joke, but whatever.
Yeah.
Jesus'
He's kind
middle
of
name
running out of
is
material.
Jesus' middle name is Hallowed, is the joke. I guess, like, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Biff was asking, why is it Jesus H. Christ?
Yep. And he says, like, ah, I would have gone with Howard.
So, yeah, that's the lamb. We get at the very end, Christopher Moore does do a little thing about why he wrote it and the research he did into it. And basically saying that, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that time-wise doesn't make sense, but the philosophies all line up. And a lot of it was done for story. But all the stuff from the Bible, he did his best to be as true to it as possible. There is a lot of contradictions between the four main gospels that he was pulling from. So he did his best, but it basically saying is like, yeah, there's going to be mistakes in there. None of it was done intentionally to insult Christianity or Catholicism or Judaism. This was all done in good fun.
It's clearly not, you know, gospel. He plays fast and loose with religious dogma, and he's just trying to tell an entertaining story, obviously. He's not going to say this is exactly what happened or this is what I believe happened. He's writing fiction, and Jesus just happens to be the major character in the story.
So what are your thoughts, Alex?
Overall, I thought it was pretty solid. It was definitely funny, especially, I don't know, it's funny, like, it's almost like Monty Python-esque, where, like,
That a bunch of times in my notes.
A lot of the humor is very, like, highbrow and clever, but at the same time, it's also, like, really raunchy and stupid. And Monty Python was, like, you know, that troupe was the master of towing that line of, like, stupid humor blended with high concept ideas and philosophies. And Christopher Moore does that very well. Like, I mean, the whole, like, learning about sex by having your friend have sex in the room next to you is, you know, it's pretty highbrow, but it's also hovers at crotch level. And there's humor like that scattered throughout the entire story. I really like that. I complained about earlier. I didn't like the massive amount of characters. I thought it was a little too dialogue heavy, and either could have been longer or it could have been shorter. I think if it was longer, we could have gotten a lot more out of, especially like Melchior, that whole scene, and more out of the apostles. However, I ended up giving it 3 stars because it was very funny. It was very entertaining.
I'm disappointed. Only three?
Only three.
I'm 5 out of 5, Alex. Both of us, this was our second read. Alex said he remembered none of it. I remembered a good chunk of it. I was still laughing super hard throughout the whole thing. And, you know, at times it's like, man, this book really aged well for a lot of our local current events, or just current events in general, I guess. So it was overall really good. A lot of funny stuff. I love the jokes, love the story. It's definitely one of my top 5 books of I've ever read so far. So yeah. You like some questions, Alex?
Lay them on me.
See how good you are on your toes here.
My shoes are off.
You're going to practice your point?
On point.
Okay, I guess we just kind of answer this. Was this book as funny the second time through for you, Alex?
Yes, it was very funny.
Do you recommend reading it or listening to the audiobook?
Well, I had to do, just for time constraints, I had to do the audiobook. Honestly, I was like, one of the reasons I gave it 3 stars was I couldn't. Like, read the words. I don't know what it's probably just me, but enjoy the audiobook. The guy who narrates it did a good job with it. He knew when to, like, hammer the jokes and all that good stuff. But yeah, it was a very funny story. Enjoyed it.
Does this story adequately cover the lost years of Jesus for developing his message? Do you think, you know, the three wise men had a good grasp of what his ending philosophy would be in the actual Bible?
I thought it was an interesting approach, taking like Middle Eastern belief structures and tying them into Catholicism. I mean, I think a lot of belief structures in general, there's a lot of overlap. So it was cool to see them take those beliefs and expand and expound on them. It was cool.
Yeah, I think he definitely spent too much time with Balthazar. He could have definitely Mesmer there, spent a lot more time there. But I think, yeah, overall, it did have a lot of good messages in there that translated well in the story.
It's never insulting towards any of the beliefs that Christopher Moore showcases.
Even with the goddess Kali there, they never really insult the religion. It's just a learning experience for Joshua, experiencing something so different than what they've ever grown up with.
Yeah, it's taking, you know, we keep seeing all these like things where like he's like, this is a good thing. I'm going to take this and expand on this and figure out how this ties in with what my father is trying to say. And then he sees the Kali things, and like that's a good example of like, this is not what we should be doing. I think that's probably why that scene is in there.
Does this book faithfully adhere to the Bible? How's your Bible knowledge, Alex? When's the last time you read it? Or do you go to Sunday school still?
Without having read the Bible, I would say it does not. Because this is a work of fiction that plays fast and loose with it. Like, there are the scenes where Jesus performing his miracles. There's a whole passion scene. It holds hands with the Bible, but it does not, I wouldn't say it adheres to it. It's more of a guideline than anything.
See, I haven't read the Bible in a long, long, long time. But my understanding is if it was in the Bible, more or less stuck to the script. He made it a little bit more entertaining, maybe, basically dumbing down the apostles, that kind of stuff. But overall, he did keep true to the story where the story was already written. Like I said, he had in his research a lot of contradictions between the four gospels. So he'd have to pick one or the other or try to combine them, and he would do that. And he was, in that last section, went into some detail in the areas where he did have to make some changes. Has Biff's role of taking on Joshua's sin change how you view Jesus?
It doesn't. I think Jesus in this mortal form was just doing the best he could. And there are things like sometimes you have to understand what it is you're preaching against in order to effectively teach it. So I think Biff was very helpful for him in that, and it doesn't change my view of Jesus at all, really. Like, I think Biff was being a good friend. I think he was benefiting from this in many ways as well. But yeah, no, I think there was a mutual agreement between the two, and Biff was a willing participant. So I think it's all good.
I think it does change it a little bit. I mean, if you think about it, they're kind of the different sides of the same coin, kind of like in Anansi Boys, the two brothers there, where they were kind of split off, you know. And obviously in this story there, they're not broken apart, but they're so attached at the hip that they almost are the same person, and just one going in trying to pull in one direction, the other pulling in the other direction. And you know, Biff is showing Joshua the different experiences that Joshua can't have. I do like the joke that Joshua is getting so annoyed with all the sex Biff is having, it makes it one of the major sins. And Biff is like, what do you mean? This is one of the greatest feeling things in the world.
Yeah, it's like the whole, like, if you have lust in your heart, then you have committed adultery. It's like, yeah, that was definitely a Biff doing like a little self-insert there. Just be like, hey, come on, man. We're all going to hell then.
Yeah, and a lot of that was because Joshua was jealous of Biff's and Maggie's relationship, even though it had become a non-sexual one. What are your thoughts on the three wise men and their portrayals of their cultures?
Christopher Moore was able to portray them and their cultures in a respectful manner. Obviously, Jesus is supposed to kind of like take all three of their lessons and gain mastery over it to a point where he is beyond even what they are. So they, in the end, those three wise men, like, they're very smart people, but they're also humanly flawed. and we fear death. We search for things we're never going to find, and we try and rely on things we don't fully understand. Balthazar didn't fully understand his magic. However, he relied on that for his long life, when in reality, he probably should have passed away a long time ago.
I thought the wise men ended up being a little shallow. None of them were truly wise, per se. They had the veneer of wisdom, but as we found out with Balthazar, it was all stolen magic. With Gaspar, it was fake it till you make it. And it was really only Mesmer who had any kind of wisdom, but it was that problem of he just kept it to himself and focused on his stretching his body and fitting into jars.
And that's like a big thing with Joshua, is that he took all three of those beliefs and he shared them with the world.
How does Moore's portrayal of women in this story compare to modern Christianity view of women? You're the tough one.
I mean, most of the women we meet are prostitutes. But it's, I think that's partially played up for humor, and that's just, you know, the people that Biff threw his allegiance in with. And I mean, we even see with Joshua, like, or even like the teaching of Christ, like, you know, everyone's included. So he's these women of ill repute, as you might call them, like they are part of Joshua's message, and he's trying to share that. How they're portrayed versus, you know, actual like biblical expectations and portrayals, I think, I mean, obviously they're a little more fleshed out in this book. I mean, they're truly given like a human feel. It's not just, you know, Mary and Maggie. We get all the women that shape this story.
There's definitely a lot of nuance put in all of his female characters. They're, even the different prostitutes are all very different. They're not just a cutout. Oh, yeah, this is a prostitute.
Yeah, the most of the prostitutes that they interact with, they are in complete ownership of their bodies, and like there's a lot of like sexual liberation, which is, you know, interesting aspect of things. It's pretty cool with like in a religion that's kind of always preached modesty. It's cool to see.
How is Biff's friendship different from everyone else in the story?
You mentioned like, you know, it's yin and yang. Like Biff is basically completing what Joshua is as a human. So, you know, Biff is selfishness and greed and lust, and Joshua, you know, is pure but and curious and adventurous, and, you know, they complete each other. Everyone else has to learn from Joshua, whereas Biff seems to have sometimes understand Joshua more than Joshua sometimes even understands himself, and he can keep Joshua in check. He's someone that can go toe-to-toe on philosophical debates, help them flesh out ideas. Like in the book, like Biff helps Joshua write the Sermon on the Mount, and, you know, they're able to toss those ideas back and forth and be equals rather than one's a student, one's a master.
I kind of took it as Biff is the only one that's actually friends with Joshua. The rest are followers of Joshua's ideal. I mean, even Maggie ends up falling in love with the idea of Joshua, where Biff was like, no, this is about Joshua, and we gotta be his friend, not be his ally, not just be blind followers. And because of all this time with Joshua, he had that unique look into the inner workings of how his friend thought, which is how he was able to do a lot of the stuff he did and guide the people that he was trying to push around and control to make sure Joshua didn't do anything too stupid.
And like he's not misinterpreting what Joshua is saying, like a lot of the apostles, where he's debating and they're having those discourses that are really required in order to have established like a set of beliefs. You need to have your beliefs challenged, and Biff was there to do that for Joshua.
Okay, now for the final big question. Was this book offensive? And what groups do you think would find this book offensive?
I would say the diehard fans of John the Baptist might be offended by this book.
He She still does have a following.
He sure does. All those Baptist boys. I don't know who's offended. Oh, but yeah, we just lost all of our listeners. Yeah,
all three of them.
I wasn't offended by it. And again, like, I'm not a hugely religious person. There might be people who, you know, just hear that concept like, oh yeah, it's a comedy story about Christ's upbringing and teenage and early 20s. And just like the mere concept of it can be offensive because it goes against biblical teachings. However, it wasn't a big deal to me.
I don't think a lot of the people that would have been offended actually would have read it. They would have just saw the title and the concept and been screaming bloody murder, as most people do these days when something might offend them.
Is either that or they read it and like took copious notes and spent twice as long on it than anyone else? It's like, was it Howard Stern said, like, my fans listen to me for 20 minutes a day. The people who hate me listen to me for 45 minutes a day.
Yeah, well, that's all I got for this one, Alex.
Okay, well, that is Lamb by Christopher Moore. Solid book.
Yeah.
Highly recommended if you like 3-star rated books.
Or 5-star rated books if you have taste. And don't just listen to it on an audiobook because, you know, life.
I have a long commute. What's the perfect time to put it on? Had it done in a week.
So, Alex, what's our next book? Since it's your turn to pick.
All right, we're going to get into some controversy with this one. This is going to be The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie. It was controversial when it first came out for its portrayals in YA story of acts of violence. And also, it's more recently gone under fire because of behaviors of the author, Sherman Alexie. So it should be a fun read. It'll be a fun conversation to have.
Looking forward to it, Alex.
Are you, though?
I am. Better than the last bonus book, or two bonus books ago.
That was a classic.
I'm still recovering.
Not enough whiskey. Yeah, I'm looking forward to discussing this book. This one is, I don't know, I have a lot of top fives. I have more than five top fives. This one is probably a top five for me as far
quantum
as...
Quantum Mechanics.
What's that?
Quantum Mechanics.
Yeah, Quantum Mechanics. So yeah, I got like 20 books in my top five. But yeah, this one, I read it, you know, like 5 years ago, and it's just stuck with me ever since. I'm a big Sherman Alexie fan of his writing anyway. And this is probably his like magnum opus of everything he's ever written.
Okay. So if you want to get a hold of us, you can. We have a email account, kendallbookworms@gmail.com. You can email us there. We have an Instagram, at kendallbookworms. DM us there if you would like.
DM Joe there.
Yep. Yeah, I do all the social media stuff.
And all the work.
Yeah, Alex just shows up, read the book literal hours before we record.
I got the hard job.
Yeah, he has to know what to say. I do everything else, including the good looks. The silence is deafening.
Yeah, my the notes I took for Lamb could have fit on an index card.
Alex, it's your hair. That's what the problem is.
I got long hair these days.
He's going for the emo look.
Yeah, I can see every third word through the follicles, these glorious mane atop my head that falls over my eyes.
Anyways, like now that we've lost sun. Our very last listener.
Sorry, Mom.
We are hosted by Podbean. You can check us out there. Our website will be in the description. Do we have anything else, Alex?
Yeah, just buy my book.
Yeah, buy Alex's books.
He's got Universe of Ragnarok.
Yeah, there are that book and his other ones are on Amazon.com. Go check them out. The link is also in the description.
Now with fewer typos.
Good thing you had that interview with Troy.
Yeah, Troy puts me to shame. That guy's book was flawlessly done.
Yep.
So yeah, like and subscribe to Troy Farkas.
Yeah, and give us a like too if you are so inclined. Please do. We're desperate.
Yeah. Nothing says good radio like begging our listeners.
Okay, Alex, get us out of this before we annoy people any longer.
We appreciate all of our listeners. But yeah, this has been Lamb. I'm Alex.
I'm Joe.
And you've been listening to Bookworms.